Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, welcome back to the Daily Jungle. Great to have you here. Big show today. Three great interviews. SI's Tom Verducci, Chargers safety Trey Boston, and Packers cornerback Devon House. All three were tremendous. Scooter Jeanette went big fly four times last night. A part-time player going legend. 5 for 5. 4 bombs, 10 RBI, and Le'Veon Bell learned a tough lesson, sliding into the DMs of the wrong gram model. Plus, more Smack-Off talk. The date for Smack-Off. Plus, more Smack-Off talk. The date for Smack-Off 23 is set, July 28th. As you know, Alvy, it's time for you to do what you do. Also, Scooter Jeanette, which is where I'm going to start, had 4 home runs last night. 4. So we'll talk to him about that and a few more things. Also today, LA Chargers safety, Trey Boston. Green Bay Packers corner, Devon House. It's Wednesday, so it's an ATP day. Shock the world. Somebody asked me something I've never been asked before. Use that as a personal challenge. Bring something new to it. Hit me up with an ATP. Let me start with some baseball. A Cincinnati Red had a full government game last night. Now, you know my deal. When an athlete goes off, I usually hit them or you with their full government. Last night, Ryan Joseph Jeanette. But honestly, this might be the first time I would prefer to go with a guy's alias, because the alias is better than his government. Scooter freaking Jeanette. Hell yes, this guy's Scooter. He's nicknamed Scooter after his favorite Muppet. But after last night, my man might want to change his favorite Muppet to Gonzo, because that's what he did. Not once, not twice, not thrice, 4 times. Of course, badass name, badass game.
Jeanette steadily waiting the pitch. Oh, this baby is hammered high and deep, and it is 5-0 Reds. That's a grand slam. My goodness, Scooter Jeanette.
Gant to the plate. And this ball hammered into right center field, and it's a long, far one, 2-run home run. Scooter Jeanette, have a night, young man.
Ball hit down the left field line by Jeanette into the corner. That's a home run for Scooter Jeanette. The other way, over the 328 mark, into the seats it goes. And that is the third home run of a night for Scooter Jeanette. Line drive, right field, ball carrying well. Home run, Scooter Jeanette. Not one, not two, not three, but 4. 4 home runs tonight for Scooter Jeanette.
Reds Radio, have yourself a night, Scooter. A hat trick and 1. Listen, guys leaving the yard are doing so right now at an alarming rate. I'm not sure why that is. Bad pitching, advanced metrics, they're playing with Super Balls instead of baseballs, the new roid, I don't know, who knows? But I know this, no matter what they're playing with or what kind of access they have to new data or metrics or information, even if the field is unlevel, a dude jumping ship 4 times in a single game is still a spectacle, regardless of what's going on. And especially if that dude goes 5'10", 185, and is a utility man. This guy doesn't even start. He was 0 for his last 19 coming in. And check this. He hit more home runs last night than he had for the entire season. Coming in, he had 3. He left with 7. Hell, he only had 38 in his entire career coming into that game. So you know that phrase, can't predict baseball? This is the very definition of it. He's now the first major leaguer to smash 4 home runs since Josh Hamilton did it back in 2012. The first Red to ever do it. And he's the first scrapper named Scooter to do it. Now look, I know the roid era turned out to be a cold shower for our tater obsession, but check this. There are fewer 4 home run games in the history of baseball than there are perfect games. It's tougher to do that than to throw a perfect game. 17 4-homer games compared to 23 perfectos. Easier to go 27 up, 27 down than it is to leave the yard 4 times. So where does that leave us? I don't want to say that you want to start giving this cat the Bonds treatment and intentionally walk in with the bases loaded. But then again, maybe you do, because you have to pitch around this guy. I don't care if the bases are loaded and you've got Pete Rose, Joe Morgan, and the rest of the Big Red Machine coming up next in the order. This is Scooter freaking Jeanette we're talking about. You have to pitch around him. Better yet, you don't pitch to him at all. Take advantage of that new rule. Just hold up four fingers and point to first base. You cannot even risk throwing an intentional ball near Scooter Gennett right now, because he'll simply reach across the plate and he'll take it the opposite way. And if you did not know his name before last night, you know it now. Scooter F. Gennett. Short for Scooter freaking Gennett. Four bombs. Have yourself a night. 1-800-636-8686. Scooter even had trouble processing it himself, admitting it was all a little bit too surreal.
It's surreal, man. It really is. I'm truly blessed being from here, born here, watching all those guys play when I was little, and to do something that's never been done is just, I don't know, I can't put words on it, but, you know, it's an honor for sure.
It's no wonder they weren't waiting for him with a little Dixie cup back at the locker. Tom Verducci is my guest. Cincinnati Reds Scooter Gennett had a grand total, Tom, of 38 career home runs. Only one game in his major league career with multiple home runs. And then he goes out last night. He goes 5-for-5, four bombs, 10 runs batted in. Did you ever think you'd see a game like that from Scooter Gennett?
No, not even close. You know, it's really weird the way baseball can work, though. You know, a lot of these great games, whether it's, you know, Mark Witten or some of these other guys who have thrown no-hitters, unlike other sports, where the marginal player, and Scooter Gennett, nice little player, but he is a marginal player, can pop up at any time and have a all-time great historic game. I don't know other sports that work that way. It's part of the charm of baseball. But, no, there's no way anybody, even in his own clubhouse, saw even a three-homer game coming, never mind four.
That's a wild game, to be sure. Tom Verducci joining us. I mean, that's a strange, strange thing, but baseball is that way. And Tom, I mentioned the book, Breaking, or The Cubs Way, the Zen of Building the Best Team in Baseball and Breaking the Curse. Let's talk about the Cubs for a minute. They beat the Marlins 10-2 last night. That's their fifth straight win, and that comes after a six-game losing streak. When you look at the way they're playing right now, does it feel like they flipped a switch, and are they back to looking a lot more like themselves?
A little bit. Listen, you knew there was a run coming for this team. It was a matter of when. I'm actually a little surprised that they were so lukewarm for 2 months of the season. I thought they'd start slow because Joe Maddon slow played his older starting pitchers in spring training, and they came out of the gate, velocity down, not quite as sharp, and you knew it was going to take a little time for them to get on point. I was surprised it took this long, but they have a lot of making up to do in terms of the ground in the division. I still think they're going to win 95 games. I don't think they're a 100-win team based off that start anymore. But yes, it wouldn't surprise me now if you see this team go, say, 15 games over in 1 month, because I think they still are the most talented team in baseball. And I say that with all due respect to the Houston Astros, because right now the Astros are the best team in baseball the way they're playing.
Now, one of the things you wrote about in the Cubs Way was that when Theo Epstein and the team went to work on turning around that organization, quote, they made a fundamental decision early after coming to Chicago that the one edge they could exploit was found in a very old school resource, people, end quote. What do you mean by that?
I mean that Theo was a guy like many of the general managers today, the younger ones, who got on board the analytics train early on. And Theo thought in Boston, I could just build a team based on on-base percentage, strikeouts per nine for my starting pitchers, basically put my faith in the numbers. And he saw at the end of his tenure in Boston when things went wrong, especially September of 2011 in Boston when that disastrous September hit, and there was so much bad will and feeling in that clubhouse, he realized that chemistry and character does matter. So he made that a priority. You know, his first big meeting, he brought all the people who worked for the Cubs to a summit meeting in Arizona right before he started with the Cubs. And for 4 days, he had everybody in the same room, 8 hours a day. The first day was spent on hitting. The second day was spent on pitching. The third day on defense. The entire fourth day, entire day was devoted to character. What kind of players do we want in this organization? And to me, this is not a happy accident that he wound up with these extroverted team leader, team-oriented group of guys like Schwarber and Bryant and Rizzo. That's all by design, and I think that has turned out to be a really cool thing that he's done. And just a small example for you. This year, he called up Ian Happ, Major League debut, the rookie. And it was kind of a last-minute deal in the middle of the night. He sent a private plane to get his mom and bring him to the game so she could be there for the first game of her son's career. Not a lot of organizations would do that or even think about that, but that's kind of how Theo and the Cubs operate. They They operate as a people-first organization.
Clones. How about you give me 1 minute so I can talk to you about Ferguson? Ferguson helps facilities pros by supplying innovative and reliable products, but what Ferguson really offers are solutions. Ferguson has a dedicated team of facilities experts, and with nationwide coverage, we deliver directly to your facility right when you need them. Plus, Ferguson's broad inventory of maintenance, repair, and operations products, along with plumbing, HVAC, and appliances, sets Ferguson apart from traditional facility suppliers. So learn more about how Ferguson Facility Supply can help your facility at Ferguson.com today. That's Ferguson. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. That book's called The Cubs Way. It's out right now. Tom Verducci is our guest. Now, Tom, you've written one legendary piece after another for SI, and one of the most famous was the SI Special Report cover story, Totally Juiced. It included Ken Caminiti's admission that he used PEDs. We just passed the 15th anniversary of that story. As you look back on that now, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
First thing that comes to my mind is how unfair that game was back then. And Ken Caminiti was the one person who had, let's say, the guile or the smarts to say the emperor has no clothes. I thought it was the worst-kept secret in baseball about how prevalent steroid use was. I didn't know to what degree, but I knew it had gotten to the point where clean players were coming up to me and saying, this is an unfair game. I feel like just to compete on an even playing field, I have to take steroids, and if I don't, I'm at a disadvantage. I knew it started to flip at that point, but Caminiti was the one, the only one, the first one, who put a name and a face to it. And what really struck me, Jim, was when he made his admission, he flat out said, I have absolutely no regrets. I would do it again, because that was the way the game was played in those days.
You know, there's so much to unpack in that, right there, Tom. Ken Caminiti, and I'll be honest about this, they pay guys like you and me to be objective and to be impartial. You know, for the record, I'm going to say I love that guy. I thought Ken Caminiti was such a good dude and such a hard-nosed player. But in terms of it being guile or guts, I mean, why do you think that he admitted that? And did he have any idea how big that was going to be when he went on record with it?
Jim, I remember at the time he was going through some alcohol and drug rehab issues, and anybody who knows anybody who's even been involved in something like that knows the first step has to be complete honesty. So as he told me several times, I have nothing to hide. And I think he really meant that in a very broad sense about his life. So when I asked him questions, it was not his nature at that point to hide. And again, there was no regret on his part, so he didn't feel like he was encumbered by that. And I can tell you that later that night, after we had done hours of interviews, I went out to dinner with him, and he turned to me and he said, this is pretty big, isn't it? And I said, well, yeah, this is going to be pretty big. And he said, you know what? I don't have anything to hide. I'm okay with it.
So how did other players around the league and even in his own clubhouse react to his comments?
Well, first of all, as you know, Jim, I think Caminiti was the ultimate teammate to have. Anybody who ever played with Cammy absolutely loved the guy. I mean, there's nothing that would stop him from giving anything short of 100% effort. And he truly cared about his teammates as much as he cared about his own game. So you start with that. But when he came out and was honest about his own admission, I think a lot of the dirty plays in the game were like, oh man, we had a good thing going and this guy is going to ruin it. You know, why is he stepping out of our thin blue line to basically call out what everybody else really could see but weren't able to really put a name and face to. So I think I know he got a lot of blowback from the players, but again, you're talking about a guy who otherwise was supremely respected for being the ultimate teammate.
Tom Verducci joining us. You know, Tom, you wrote a piece for SI.com that looked back on what the game was like at that time, and you recapped what was the steroid starter kit. This is an amazing passage right here. Quote, it was described by one veteran as glistening, watery skin from the HGH, shaved body hair, a helmet that doesn't fit properly on a growing head, protruding brows or chin, braces on the teeth to accommodate growing facial structure, and a sore buttocks from the needles. So how common was all of that at that time?
You know, as Curt Schilling said, a lot of these guys look like Mr. Potato Head, where the body parts just didn't match in terms of proportions. I think it was pretty common, and I know, you know, there's a lot of people who charge the media with turning a blind eye to this. I would say we actually acted very responsibly because, yes, we saw a lot of these bodies, but what are you supposed to do? Are you supposed to just write, hey, this guy looks like he's on the juice, this guy looks like he's on steroids, this guy came in 20 pounds heavier, he must be juicing? You know, that's a lot more irresponsible than being charged with looking the other way. You know, as I wrote in that piece, Jim, in 1998, before the season started, I sat right across from Mark McGwire in his house, in his living room, and put it right there on the table saying, I've heard you use steroids. Do you use steroids? And he said, no, I do not. I will use anything that's legal. I don't use steroids. So what are you going to do at that point? You're just going to write that McGwire looks too big, that he must be using something? No, you can't do that. And again, that's why I thought Caminiti was the tipping point, because now you had someone who had his name attached to it for attribution, saying the emperor had no clothes.
You know, so one last thought about Caminiti. When did he first start using PEDs, and then what kind of an impact did they have on him?
1996, actually, his MVP season in May of that year, he actually hurt his shoulder diving for a foul ball. Typical Caminiti, it really had no shot at the ball, but dove, fell on the shoulder. Really, I think he probably dislocated it, but to get through the season, playing in San Diego, he just drove across the border to Tijuana, walked into a pharmacia where you can buy synthetic testosterone over the counter. He had no idea what he was doing. He knew nothing about cycles, so he just kept using it without getting off. So his own body's natural testosterone production completely shut down. When you introduce synthetic testosterone, the body's own factory of testosterone says, well, we're good. We don't need to produce anymore. And that causes all kinds of problems, impotence, lethargy, liver damage, kidney damage. And he did go through all those things. I mean, I know a lot of players will say, well, he didn't do it, quote unquote, the right way. But you have to remember, he was an early adapter. And as years went on, guys started to adopt drug gurus and chemists, and people were drawing their blood to make sure they manage it in a, quote unquote, safe way. But as an early adapter, he was a pioneer, at least in terms of baseball, and really didn't know what he was doing.
So, Tom, chemists took the game over back in the day, and then when baseball had no choice, with a gun to its head, they kind of ripped the game back. But we know the bad guys will always be a step ahead of the good guys trying to run them down because the stakes are so high, there's so much money, and guys are so competitive. Could something like that roid era ever happen again? And what do you think is going on right now?
I don't think it could happen to that extent. I mean, that was literally the Wild West, where anything went. There were no checks and balances. I think you'd be naive, though, to think that they are totally eradicated from the game. As you said, when you have now sophisticated chemists and drug gurus, and more importantly, when you have this much money at stake, you're going to find people who are going to look for an illegal edge in the game. And you look at the minor league numbers and some of the testing positives there, and you can see that it goes on. And I get it. I can understand how, you know, for someone striving, everything in their life is about getting to the big leagues. If there's a pill, if there's a needle that can help get them there, and the risk is that they get, you know, they have to sit down for 80 games, they're going to take that risk. So it still goes on, but not to the prevalence or certainly the bang for your buck, if you will, in terms of what you can use. But it does go on, and it will go on. And I will say baseball has done a really good job in terms of having gold standards of testing. And these players do get tested a lot. It is Olympic-style type testing. But you can always be, if you really want to be, you know, locked in with some of these drug people, you can stay one step ahead. So it still goes on, but again, not to the degree we saw back then.
In front of the media, rocking an Emperor Palpatine hood, big enough to cover his eyes, and answering questions about Tom Brady's alleged concussions. And take note, when I use that phrase, answering questions, I use that phrase very, very loosely.
File injury reports every week. So, not sure when the next one's due, probably sometime in September, but we'll have one for you then.
That can be a complex medical, you know, topic where you have your independent doctors on the sideline and then players sometimes can self-report. How challenging is that as a team to manage that?
We file our reports in compliance with league guidelines.
Have you seen progress in that regard, though, Bill, in terms of the players being more willing to say I'm not right?
You know, our medical staff really handles the injury situation with players. Like, players don't come to me and I don't treat them for injuries. That's not really my job. That's what we have medical staff for.
To what degree is player safety important to you personally, particularly as it pertains to concussions?
Can't even listen to that. I mean, there he is. Welcome back, Hood. Welcome back. After what seemed like a four-month vacay, the Hood is back. He's in regular season form already. I mean, that was painful to listen to. He talked about no days off, no days off. Hell, no, he looked like off. And sounded like he didn't take
no
a single day
days
off.
Off.
when he flipped that switch and went right back into football coach mode. My man was like this iconic musical act making its first tour in years. They got the band back together. And he was not about to hit you with some cuts off their new EP. He's going to kick off with what everybody knows and everybody loves, the hits. And by hits, I mean the classic Belichick mumbling, the unfinished thoughts, the fragmented sentences. Now, I'm surprised he didn't come out for an encore, that the media didn't cheer him back out, and he runs on stage with an encore and hits that scrum with, "We're on to Cincinnati.
We're on to Cincinnati."
Which is blast the hit that everybody came to hear in the first place. Seattle.
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 But the media scrums out there chanting, "Seattle, Seattle, Seattle." Seattle. This guy Seattle. Bursts Seattle. Onto the stage.
Seattle.
And immediately Seattle. Drops a, "Seattle.
Seattle.
Freebird.
Seattle.
Stairway.
Seattle.
Baba.
Seattle.
Seattle.
Seattle."
Hey, look, I understand it. The last thing that Hood wants on his first day back is to answer questions from the media. I mean, hell, that's the last thing he wants on any day. And the first day back after a long vacay is tough for anybody. But it's even worse when you're faced with a bunch of crap that you have to deal with that's been piling up for you when you do return. We all know what it's like to come back from vacation and have that crap stacked high on our desk. And especially when this guy was already 5 weeks behind because he won the Super Bowl. So you can only imagine how far he was behind when he finally did show up for work.
5 weeks behind.
And thanks to Tommy's wife, Giselle, he has even more to deal with. The ripples that she created in that sit-down with CBS have now become tsunamis for the NFL, the Patriots, and worst of all, for the Hood himself. And if there's anything this dude hates more than human interaction, smiling, or just life in general, it's having to deal with something that one of his players' wives said. So of course he's going to keep his answers to three sentences or less, or three words or less. I mean, come on, media. You got to know that by now. Just as you know that if you really want this guy to answer any question of any importance, you had better pose it during a lacrosse podcast.
It's funny because when I grew up and, you know, my dad coached the Naval Academy, that was a little bit of a frustration for him as I can remember him talking
about. Stop right
there.
That's the same guy. That is the same guy. That guy could not be any more thoughtful, reflective, engaging, charismatic. He's enunciating beautifully. This guy cannot stop talking. He's not mumbling. He's not talking in broken sentences. Listen to this guy. Freaking Winston Churchill.
These guys come in and get 1,500 on their college boards, and they're, you know, some of the smartest young people in our country. And
perfect mic technique. Right up on it.
And that kind of thing. So it doesn't always translate, you know.
This is the on to Cincinnati guy.
We're on to
Seattle guy.
Seattle,
you know, football instinctiveness.
Grammatically perfect.
Guys that had trouble reading and writing.
Transitioning beautifully into other topics.
Very literate or very well educated.
5 weeks behind,
but they knew how to play football and they could see what
a freaking Renaissance man
on the field were doing all at once because they just were able to process that. And guys, that
welcome back, Hood.
You know,
not only is this guy back, but he's better than ever before.
Had trouble seeing what two people were
doing.
Thanks,
Alvy. Like, quick, somebody hit this guy with a Deflategate question, or ask what he thinks about Eric Mangini ratting him out back in the day and now making the rounds, trying to be friends with him again, or maybe ask how he can be the best football coach ever, but still fail as miserably as he did in Cleveland. There's no question. This guy won't answer. Ask him anything you want. Welcome back, Hood Man. I can't believe that guy is that guy. In other words, what's my takeaway from this? Time and place. Time and place. You want this guy to answer a question, you ask him that question during a lacrosse podcast. Otherwise, you're going to get what you always get from him. And he is back. The summer of Hood is over. Devon House is my guest. Devon, really good to have you on. How are you today?
Doing good. Just got done practicing, but I'm doing good.
All right, good to visit with you. So you're at OTAs with the Packers, and we'll get into your crazy journey back to OTAs in a moment. But as somebody who was drafted by Green Bay and then spent four seasons with the team before going to Jacksonville, first of all, how does it feel to be back with the Packers?
Oh, man, it's a blessing, man. I mean, even though I did leave I was always a Packer in heart until the day we played in week one last year. But, I mean, I was sitting there watching all the games, recorded the games, still watched them, still rooted for them because they were in a different conference than us. But my wife always said, once a Packer, always Packer, regardless. So it was good. I'm glad to be back. I'm lucky to be back. Excited for this year.
All right, so I would imagine you walk back in that locker room and it probably felt like you never left. Your position coach, Joe Witt Jr., pointed out that you've been going to the hotel where the young players stay in the offseason. He said, quote, he's being that leader that we need. He's the most veteran player in the room, and we need him not only to be a voice of strength off the field, but on the field as well. He's doing that, end quote. So how much pride do you take in that role of being a leader of that particular group?
I take big pride. It's not just mentoring people as football players. Hopefully some of these young guys that are coming in that I can help them become better men. Prime example, Tremont Williams helped me become a better man. To this day, he's a good friend of mine. I call him for advice. I call him about, not just football advice, but just advice on the kid, how's your kids doing and whatnot. So hopefully I can change someone's life like that in our DB room where after football's over, this goes beyond that.
So what about also, in addition to Tremont Williams, what about a guy like Charles Woodson? When you first got there, he was there. What did he do for you when you were young, and what are the types of things you learned from him?
Work ethic. Even the days that he wasn't out there physically practicing, I found out middle of my first year, because there's some days I didn't see Woodson out there in the field. So one day I was using the restroom, and I seen him. He was in there running sprint with a vest on. While we was outside practicing, and this whole time I thought, oh, he's a vet, he's a future Hall of Famer, he's not practicing. No, he's just still in there working his butt off, trying to get better, just being safer with it. Just work ethic. It's a blessing to learn behind those two guys. Woodson's going to be a future Hall of Famer.
Packer Devon House joining us. So I mentioned this incredible role or this incredible journey you had in getting back to OTAs. Knowing your importance to that team and the way you take that leadership role so seriously, you go back to Monday, you're traveling back from Texas to get to the Tuesday OTAs, you land in Minneapolis late at night, and it's too late to make your connection to Green Bay. At that point, what were you thinking?
I was thinking of getting a rental car. I'll just get a rental car, but then rental cars were all busy or they didn't have no cars available. I didn't know if it was because it was a one-way or whatnot, but every place I tried to call, they either was closed or no one picked up or they didn't have no cars available for my service. And I wasn't going to take an Uber ride and pay, freaking $1,000 to drive 4.5 hours. So I remember I tweeted something out and said, hey, man, I'm going to be stuck. This is going to suck. And someone wrote back and said, hey, just catch a ride. So I figured I'd take it to Twitter and got a couple of feedbacks.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. So you take this thing to Twitter. What was the response like? What were you expecting? What kind of responses did you get?
I knew some people were going to say yes, but I didn't know if they were serious or not. So, of course, some people did say yes, and then I read them back, and they would respond, oh, I can't believe you wrote me back. And I'm like, oh, yeah, but are you willing to take me still? But they're like, oh, no, I can't. I get work tomorrow and whatnot. So some people are just happy that they got a response out of me. It was good feedback. A lot of people were wanting to do it. There was a good 5 people that wanted to do it. They're willing to do it. But I just felt more comfortable with Chad and Mike doing it.
All right, so Chad Johnson and his brother Mike, they reach out. They say they'll come and get you. And then, sure enough, there's your ride. Now, Chad even brings along a pillow and a blanket for you so you can nap it out on the drive. But even though you'd been traveling all day long, you refused to sleep for the first part of the drive. Why was that?
I felt like it wasn't fair if I was just to go to sleep. These guys are driving 4.5 hours for me. I offered multiple times of me paying for them to do it for me, and they refused to take any type of money. So I figured I'd repay them with chatting with me if that was good enough for them. I just imagine me being in their shoes and, King Griffey Jr. access for a ride or something like that. I would have millions of questions about baseball, about his swing, about him playing with his dad, things like that. So I was there to answer, you know, free interview, I guess you would say, for a good hour and a half.
Hey, listen, for a couple of Packer fans, that's a dream come true. In fact, these guys would later say that it was the best day of their entire lives. But, I mean, was there any part of you that thought or was concerned that maybe these dudes aren't Packer fans? Maybe they don't have my best interest at heart. Maybe it's not the best idea?
No, I didn't at all. Because people ask me that all the time. Because, first of all, I did my homework. I mean, your Twitter feed can tell you a lot about a person. So, I mean, I looked through the Twitter feed, the people they were following. So they were for sure Packer fans. They were family people. They both had kids, and they both were believers, so which was important to me. And a buddy of mine named Kurt, who's a big Packer fan as well, gave the okay of them too because he heard of them too. But yeah, I wasn't scared at all. I understand because this nowadays this world is. I mean, there's a lot of bad stuff going on, but there's more, a lot more good people than there's bad people for sure.
Devon Howe's joining us. So they drive you, and you get there at 3:30 in the morning. And at that point, Chad said that he would have been happy just to get a photo with you. But instead, you take these guys to the stadium, you show them around, you show them the Super Bowl trophies, you give them some gear. What did they make of that whole tour?
I think they liked it. Hopefully, they were kind of for sure amazed. They took pictures of the Super Bowl trophies, walked them through our little lunchroom, took them in the locker room, and while I was in the locker room, I was getting the cleats and stuff for them, and they were just walking around, looking at the locker room, kind of in shock, which is kind of funny. But it was good, though. I'm glad they enjoyed it, and hopefully we can reconnect again.
Well, I mean, you tried to hook them up with a hotel room, but they said they had to get back to work. They wouldn't even take you up on that. And it was a battle for you to even give them some money for gas. I mean, the bottom line, you being who you are and you being a vet, I think folks would have understood if you just took a flight out the very next day. Why was it so important for you to get there that night? Why did you have to get back in?
I didn't have to, but I feel like my role in this team right now is leadership. Leadership in the room. I mean, the guys tell me that now. They say, "Oh, I would have done this, or I would have done that, or I wouldn't even gotten a ride, or I would just got a hotel." But my role here is to be a leader right now, you can't really lead from always missing OTAs and stuff like that. So I wanted to set the example, and in regards, I needed to be there for the room, for the young guys. So yeah, that's one of the reasons why.
Devon Howe's my guest. So finally, you are back. What's it like then to be back in Green Bay and to be with Packer fans?
I mean, it's great, as you can tell already. I mean, the fans love you, and it's the best. I mean, the best fans in the world. And there's not too many other fan bases that are like Green Bay's. I mean, I don't know too many people can do what I've done in other cities, but I love it. I remember wishing for days like this last year and the year before. When I left, but like I said, once a Packer, always a Packer, and I wouldn't want to be anywhere else right now.
Right, so let's talk Le'Veon Bell. No tougher back to tackle or to knock down than Le'Veon Bell. My man's elusive, but he was put on ice a few days ago when he learned a lesson that more and more pros are learning the hard way. Do not treat the gram like the club. Because if the internet is in ink, the gram may as well be a Sharpie. And if you're going to slide into somebody's DMs, you better know who you're dealing with because it could end very badly. And it did for him. Once again, we're talking about one of the Shield's most elusive dudes. But he just got jacked by a 100-pound athlete with tremendous upside. You see, Bell is typically the one juking linebackers out of their jockstrap. But instead, he seemed to be looking to slide out of his own with Insta model Karen V. And it could not have gone any worse for him as she tattooed the Pro Bowler with what might as well be a permanent skull and crossbones emoji. Let's just say she's not nearly as impressed with him as he is with her. She's not impressed with a new father looking to get his side hustle on via DM networking. Because Bell hit her with a, quote, "Hello, gorgeous," after she posted a selfie from her latest gram work down in Thailand. She clapped right back with her own blue check and 1 million followers with some straight fire. Quote, I will never understand why dudes or athletes, especially those with girlfriends, even try. Truly makes me sick. Didn't he just have a baby with a beautiful girl? Then she hit him with a, bye, Felipe. Bye, Felipe. That's a 10-8 round for the Graham model. That's not just bringing a gun to a knife fight. That's bringing a bazooka or a tank. I'm guessing that Lev had some explaining to do between diaper changes. Hey, look, I'm not naive. Social media is the new club, especially for people who are famous or for athletes. I get that. Social media is the new club because it's faster and it's easier to get what you're looking for by simply reaching for your phone than it is to go to all that trouble of going to a club and ordering bottle service just to spit your game. I get all that. But what these guys need to know is you can't get screenshotted from the club. Nobody ever got exposed nor went viral for trying to work an angle in a club. But it happens all the time on social. How do dudes not get this yet? I mean, sure, there are exceptions. Not many, though. And for every Kristaps Porzingis who can shake it off with a shooter shoot tweet, guys like Bell should know better. Hell, he does know better. Last year, he was quoted talking about being an athlete dating in a digital era, and he said, quote, whether they think I'm attractive or like my status, lots of girls come at me on social media. Lots. Lots. You get used to it, and you handle it from there. I'm a guy who likes conversation, especially with women, and obviously they like doing it with me. You have your agent reach out, see what they're about. I can take myself out of the process. My man, follow your own advice. Listen to what you said. You've got to be a hell of a lot more tactical about this than that. You don't need a Chris Carter fall guy. Remember how Carter famously said, you got to have a fall guy?
You got to have a fall guy.
You don't need a fall guy. You need a Graham guy. Because if you had one, he might sniff this out and see if she has any interest at all before you put yourself out there on the big stage and she turns you inside out in front of her 1 million followers. And then the rest of us see it. Better yet, the reason you hire a Graham guy is to keep you off the gram. Or at least keep you from sliding into somebody else's DMs, especially when you already have a girlfriend and had a baby with her earlier in the year. Being the baddest back in the NFL does not make you the smartest back in the NFL. Nor does it make you anything other than an easy mark for Graham Model, who is just as dangerous as any blitzing linebacker. I would love to tell you that this is the last time I'm going to have to provide this PSA, but I know it's not. Social is the new club. It can make things easier, and it can make things a hell of a lot worse. Be careful whose DM you're sliding into. Better yet, if you have a girlfriend and a baby with that girlfriend, maybe you don't slide into anybody's DMs but her. Just DM your lady. She'll think that's hot. And it will keep you out of trouble. Yo, baby, you look awesome tonight on the couch. I love it when you DM me from across the room. You like that, right? Sliding into your DMs. Did you get something new done with your hair? What do you say I give you a glass of wine? What do you say I make you a sandwich? I've got some of that meatloaf from last night. You want some? What do you say I go upstairs and do that diaper change myself? What do you say you just stay there on the couch all along? I'll do the laundry. I'm gonna go take out some trash. Man, I hate it that there's only 140 characters here. Because I got lots I want to say to you. Do that. That's hot. I'm thinking about putting my wife on the gram. Janet, I'm going to put you on the gram just so I can slide into your DMs, baby. Janet doesn't know much about social. She's about to learn social. I can't wait till I put my wife on Twitter. How you like that, Janet? I might even be able to get you checked, baby. Jake and Logan will be like, Dad, what are you doing? I'm sliding into your mother's DMs. What do you think I'm doing? No, Dad! No! Just mind your own business, son. Don't you have something to do?
No!
Don't you have some homework to do? No, Dad! Look, juniors.
No!
How the hell do you think the two of you got here? Anyway, what's poppin', Twitter? Trey Boston is my guest. Glad to run you down, Trey. What's up? How are you?
I'm good. How about yourself, boss?
Yeah, great. I'm great, Trey. Good to talk to you. See, I've been going through OTAs with the Chargers. Trey, let me start right there. What's it like for you to be on the West Coast and to be with a new team and some new teammates?
Oh, everything's quite different. I'm an East Coast guy, so over here, you know, I'm experiencing great weather, not going to lie. You know, going through OTAs with the Chargers is going well right now. We're a team that's growing, and we look like we have some potential. And right now, just having fun, just going through emotions again with the new team and getting to learn my new teammates.
All right, so speaking of having fun, when you went and met with a number of teams, you had some options now. You met with the Bills, you met with the Steelers, you met with the Chargers. What was the process like? I mean, was that fun or was that stressful?
Oh, no, it was very fun. It was kind of like going back to, you know, high school when you're going on official visits. You know, you get to go places and you have the option to pick where you want to go again. So it's kind of like a recruiting process all over again for you. So to be able to go to different places, you know, that all wanted me and definitely showed me different roles for me within their schemes. It was nice and it was a great experience to have options in many of them. So it was amazing for me to go through that again.
Chargers safety Trey Boston joining us. You know, right before he came on, Trey, I was talking about how the NFL is a bottom line business. You guys know this. It's cutthroat. It's results oriented. You know what you sign up for. You know there's a possibility you might get released. It's a bottom line business. But that said, you went to the University of North Carolina. You were drafted by the Panthers. You went to the Super Bowl with them. And then this offseason, after you had career highs in a number of categories, they waived you. Did you see that coming at all? And what was your reaction when it happened?
I was pretty shocked. I thought I seen it coming maybe for the year after, maybe just not signing me back, but it came and, it was just something that I don't think anybody saw it coming. You know, I had a number of calls from players, from coaches, people we just want to part ways. So it's the NFL, you part ways different ways. So I was able to, you know, have options and end up where I need to be.
So then you have to make a decision, and there's a lot that goes into the decision that a lot of people don't see. And there was this amazing moment, and it took place at a gas station. You noticed that the price had dropped from $3.29 a gallon to $3.10 a gallon, but you had a half a tank. So I'm curious, what made you cross a couple of lanes to get to that particular gas station? What were you thinking at that time?
Oh, so what I was thinking at that time is, you know, this is an opportunity to go get some gas because I'm a nice thrifty guy. My mom taught me how to spend my money. You know, we're going to spend it wisely. So to see a change like that, I was like, oh, I got to jump on this. So, you know, to go across those three lanes, two lanes to get to the gas station, you know, it led me into something that, you know, changed my life forever.
I mean, it's an amazing thing, right? So you've got a half a tank already, but you see a chance to make a good financial decision, so you do it. Now, at that point, when you showed up at that gas station, what kind of thoughts were you having about your decision and where you might sign?
So, you know, at the gas station, you know, I was just going to, you know, just put in some gas. And, you know, in my head, you know, my true decision was between, you know, L.A. and Buffalo. I had thought those, you know, two were over, you know, Pittsburgh's visit for me, honestly, and, you know, what I felt from the schemes and, you know, looking at depth chart, you know, just everything all over. So I got to gas station, and those are my two final, you know, decisions. So I was just thinking about when I got home to my wife, you know, what would I tell her, you know, to give her the best experience of what I truly experienced from the visit.
Trey Boston joining us. All right, so then you pump your gas. and you put your wallet into your car, but a man approaches you and asks you if you have a dollar or two. So what was your reaction in that moment? Then what happened?
Yeah, so, you know, a man pulls up in the car. You know, he has, you know, three children. And, you know, just asked for a dollar or two. And, you know, in that moment, you know, I was thinking, you know, this is my, you know, this is my chance, you know, just to give him a couple dollars, you know. And you know, I see, you know, as an, you know, another man to a man, I felt like, you know, he was true. He had his work clothes on, you know, so I just gave him a couple dollars, you know, just thinking, you know, I'm a God to a God-fearing man. So, you know, he should, you know, get a chance to, you know, be able to eat or something.
All right, so you actually give him a $20 bill, and then he looks at you, and what's his response to that?
So, you know, he looks at me, and he says, you know, he wanted to shake my hand as a man and tell me thank you. You know, there's not enough God, you know, God's children in this world that help each other. You know, we claim Christianity, but people aren't truly helping each other as people. So, you know, we got to chatting about that for a little bit.
All right, so he says to you, there aren't many people like you in the world, God's children. And then he introduces himself. He says, my name's Mike Daniels, but people call me L.A. What did you make of that?
Yeah, so when he told me, you know, the people call him L.A., you know, in my mind, I was already thinking, you know, ask this man, you know, Trey, you know, we're having this conversation as God's children for a reason. You know, ask this man L.A. or Buffalo. Should I ask him just one or two? What do you think? Just pick one or two. You know, I didn't know how to ask him. So when he told me, you know, while I was thinking this, my name is Mike Daniels, people call me L.A., I instantly started crying because, you know, I had been praying for clarity. I had, you know, my preachers praying for clarity for me, you know, tons of family. So to see, you know, that just happen right in front of my eyes, as soon as I get off the plane, I just started crying.
And Trey, is there any doubt in your mind that when he said that his name was L.A., when he said his name or people refer to him as L.A., was there any doubt in your mind in that moment that you were going to sign with the L.A. Chargers? That was the sign, right?
Oh, easily. Like, there was no doubt in my mind.
All right, so you end up spending like the next half hour talking with him, but I can tell from the way you're telling the story right now how powerful it was. Do you remember anything you really talked to him about after he said that, or did everything just kind of go dark when he said, I'm L.A.?
No. So when he told me his name was L.A. and I started crying, you know, I went to grab just a tissue from my car. I wiped my eyes with a napkin, and, you know, I turned around. I seen the Jesus on the side of the on the pillar. You know, that's the other part of the story. But, you know, so, you know, when we talked about, you know what he was doing. You know, we talked about his job. He had a job. He was going to get paid Friday. It was Wednesday. So he just needed a couple dollars just to get through the couple of days because he just got a new job. He, you know, he was telling me, you know, about his kids, you know, his son, and he had two daughters. You know, one daughter had just turned five. His son Ray Ray played football, loved the Panthers. You know, so and you know, the kids got out the car. You know, they kind of played around a little bit. You know, I got to meet them, and you know, we talked about each other. You know, just, you know, how it was crazy what was going on in front of our eyes, you know, how we knew God was truly moving through us because he had been praying for, you know, somebody to ask, you know, to get money, you know, on first charges, you know, for somebody to come up for him, you know. And then, you know, for me, I knew how much it meant for me to get that message because I was going through something where literally the words are Buffalo and L.A., you know, so for him to say his name was L.A., you know, that was very powerful for me, you know, knowing that God worked in our favor.
L.A. Chargers safety, Trey Boston, my guest. I mean, obviously, a life-changing moment. So let me finally ask you this about that. At the end of the conversation, and it's obviously a profound conversation, you end up giving him $100 because of the impact that he had on your life. I'm curious, how many times have you thought back on that conversation since it happened? And then what kind of thoughts do you have when it comes up?
Oh, I thought about it almost every day. You know, people talk to me about it. My teammates are very interested in it, you know, and people, you know, talk to me about it on social media because, you know, they like the story. You know, they want to, you know, experience their own testimonies. You know, they want to know what, you know, I'm praying for. So, you know, to be able to think about how much fun I'm actually truly having on this team is it can be amazing. This team can be very, very good. And to see how this team works, how they embrace me for who I am, for you know, the player that I am, and they expect big things from me. You know, it's so powerful to think about how a conversation led me to a place that truly I feel comfortable in, you know, and I was uncomfortable making the decision, but it's amazing how God can make you, you know, comfortable in your uncomfortable, you know, feelings.
In large part because you went to get gas when theoretically you didn't really need gas, but it put you in that spot in front of that person, and that's what transpired. I mean, that's an amazing story, and I'm glad that you would share that. Trey, before you go, one last thought, something else really important. Joining the Chargers and moving across the country is not the only big change in your life this offseason. I saw back in April you tweeted, man, have you all tasted sweet and sour Skittles? These just became my favorite candy, LOL. I used to think tropical and wild berry were the best. Lay that out for me. What was it about the sweet and sour Skittles that pulled them ahead of tropical and wild berry?
Oh, man, I got some sweet and sour Skittles in my hand right now. I love sweet and sour Skittles. It's just something about the sweet and sour, but without the, like, little sour, like, bites on it. Because sometimes it'll make the roof of your tongue kind of, you know, hurt a little bit. But the sweet and sour are the best. And if you get the share size, you can actually share them with people and not be upset about sharing your sweet and sour Skittles. But the tropical and wild berry is still good. Shout out to Skittles. Skittles sent me my package a couple of days ago. And I got to make sure I shout them out because, you know, I really appreciate my package.
Bam. Just like that, we're done. So why don't you hit subscribe, maybe tell a friend, and most of all, trust the podcast. Then check back tomorrow for more in the Daily Jungle.